Welcome to Texans All Access. We are brought to you in part by Daikin. Hey, Texans fans, get a home field advantage this summer with Daikin Air Intelligence tips you can use to beat the heat in your home. Learn how to lower your energy costs, reclaim your outdoor space, and breathe easier by improving your indoor air quality. It's all part of Daikin's Air Intelligence, and you can learn all about it by visiting DaikinLovesHouston.com. As one of Houston's largest employers, Daikin is doing big things for your fellow Texans. Check out their outstanding limited warranties and financing options at your local dealer today. Now back to the show.
One more knee, and it's in the books. Watson approaches Nick Martin, takes a knee, and it is over in Detroit. The Houston Texans down the Lions on Thanksgiving. A feast, 41-25. The Texans win back-to-back and up their record to 4-7.
Oh, yeah, that record. Boy, it hurts to hear 4-7, but I'll tell you this. I thought about this when Mark and I were chatting earlier this afternoon, and we were talking about just, man, what if the Texans had won that game in Tennessee? I mean, the two-point conversion is there. It's there. It's over. It's over. You get the two-point conversion, and the ball game's over. And what if you get that one, and then somehow maybe you kick the field goal down inside, maybe you get the touchdown against the Browns, and you beat the Browns. You'd be sitting at 6-5. The Titans would then lose to the Colts and be 6-5, and you'd be in front of them. I know that sounds bizarre, but that's where you'd be if that's it. And that's not outside the realm of possibility. Really not. Those are two games, the Texans, the Titans game for sure. You can argue with me about the Browns one. I could maybe, that was tough. Just the whole day was tough. But you got to put up more than 7 points, especially when you get the ball inside their territory, I think 4-7 times. But you didn't, and you're sitting at 4-7. But man, if you get those two wins, and then Tennessee loses to the Colts this week, which is highly likely, all of a sudden you're looking at both 6-5 at the end of the weekend, and you'd be ahead because you'd have the win over them. Oh my God. Oh, either way, I want to take it one win at a time, just one game at a time. And with this game, it was fantastic. It had a lot of moments. And each and every Tuesday, I do a show called Texans Replay, and I always look back at certain things that have happened in Texans history. But I always start with the Ultimate 11 plays of the game of the week before. And I love it and makes it so easy for me when the Texans get a win, and they did. So let's do it. Let's do the Ultimate 11 plays/moments of the win over Detroit. And I start at number 11 with this play, which if you look at just the play sheet, it just says player 4-yard run on 3rd-and-1. Doesn't sound like a big deal, right? But A, we haven't gotten a lot of 4-yard runs this year. Let's be honest. B, we haven't got a lot of 4-yard runs on 3rd-and-1. Let's be honest. And C, it was Jordan Akins at tight end who made a great run for a first down at number 11. Jordan Akins gets 4 huge yards on 3rd-and-1.
Akins the fullback, Duke Johnson the tailback. Good to see Duke back in there. They give a carry to Akins, who powers forward for the first down. How about that? A turducken run by Jordan Akins to get a fresh 4 for the Texans.
I was just laughing. It was just hilarious to see Akins. I was like, I just had that reaction. It was so cool. That was at number 11. Number 10, right before the half, the Texans got a drive, but it bogged down. Up at that point, 20-14, they needed to get 3 up on the board in a big way, and Kymie Fairbairn did with this 42-yard field goal. It comes in at number 10.
And here's Fairbairn for a very important field goal, 42 yards away, right hash mark, to make it a 2-score game. Here's the snap by Weeks. Anger with the hold. The kick is up. It's good from 42 yards out by Fairbairn.
That would give the Texans a 9-point lead, a.k.a. 2 scores going into the half. And my point in that heading in was the Lions had 3 turnovers in the first half. If they go down a score and cut this thing to a 1-score lead, they're going to feel like they've got all the momentum. I can just hear them in the locker room. Look, we've had 3 turnovers, guys, and we're within 6 points. We're within 2 points of this team. But it didn't stay that way. And that was a big field goal by Kaimi to give them a 9-point lead. All right, let's get to number nine. And number nine is a guy that really has truly impressed me on so many different levels. And that's Brandon Cooks. 5 targets, 5 catches, 85 yards. Here's 27 of them coming in at number 9.
Second down and 24 at the Detroit 40-yard line. Watson in the gun. Duke in the backfield with him. Here's the snap. Watson fakes the handoff to Duke. Steps up, fires downfield, and he has Cooks for a first down down to the 13-yard line. He falls down there. The Texans get it all back and then some.
Oh, yeah. Cooks was a first down maker. He and Fuller, my goodness. I know Fuller's every single catch for Fuller ended up with a touchdown or a first down. Cooks, it felt like, was the same way, but that was a big one coming in at number 9. All right, let's get to number 8. And Cooks' partner in crime is Will Fuller. This is to get it rolling. 38-yard catch, number 8.
Second down and 5 for the Texans from the Houston 40. Watson in the gun. Duke Johnson to his left. 2 receivers right, tight to the line. Watson takes the snap. Deshaun with a little time, throws over the middle, and he's got a man. Fuller cutting right. 35, 30, 25, and brought down near the 20-yard line by Oruwariye.
Oh, man, Mark nailed it. Oruwariye can be tough to say, kind of. And I know how to say it. Mark nailed it, though. Oruwariye. I mean, it's said just like it's spelled, but sometimes in the flow of traffic, it's not Fuller or Cooks or Brandon Dunn. Oh, why am I bringing up Dunny? Well, let's get to number 7. One of the 3 turnovers, big number 92, ended up with one of them, and it's right here after a review.
Second and 3 at the Houston 27-yard line. Stafford gives Johnson over left guard, bringing people with him across the 22. The ball comes out last moment. The Texans have it. Are they going to let it stand up or say it's down?
They're going to blow him down, and I don't know how.
The ground yet, and the ball was wiggling around on his abdomen.
Oh, it's loose. It's loose.
It's out. I think it's a fumble.
The ball was loose prior to the runner being down by contact. So we have a fumble on the play recovered by Houston.
I had a feeling right away that ball was out. I had a pretty good look at it, and it's one of those timing things. When the ball was coming out, I could tell he had not hit yet, or he had just hit. I mean, it was close, but I just knew he wasn't down with that ball. I knew that for a fact. And Brandon Dunn got on that ball, and it comes in at number 7. Now, before one of the other turnovers, CJ Procise was able to get in the end zone for the first time as a Texan through the air with the same play the Texans ran against the Buffalo Bills in the playoff game. They got Carlos Hyde a receiving touchdown. CJ Procise got one, and it comes in at number 6.
Second and goal at the 2. Watson under center. Bakes the give. Rolls to his right. Throws to Procise. He's got it for the score. Touchdown, Houston. The Texans take the lead over Detroit.
That would give the Texans a 13-7 lead. Procise getting up on the board, and it comes in at number 6. All right, let's get to number 5. And this turnover, the Texans did take advantage of with that Procise touchdown. Terrell Adams forced both of these fumbles. The one you heard earlier at number 7, Brandon Dunn got. The one at number 5, Bradley Roby saw this thing and jumped on it like a cat on a laser dot. He got all over that thing. Coming in at number 5, Bradley Roby recovers a fumble forced by Terrell Adams.
Stafford under center. And you called it. Here's the run right side, and it's fruitful up to the 28-yard line, and it's out. It's a fumble, and Roby has it for the Houston Texans. Jonathan Williams coughed it up, and the Texans recover. Turnover number 2 here in the first quarter.
Each and every week, I do an article called Know Your Foe, and I put the 5 keys to the game on each side, 5 offense, 5 defense. And I had the same key this week as I did last week because the Texans won the game against the Patriots without getting a turnover. Patriots didn't turn one over. Texans didn't turn one over. That was not the case on Thursday against the Detroit Lions. The Texans did spit one on the ground. CJ Procise, unfortunately, after that Brandon Dunn recovery. But I always put, hey, man, a turnover would look nice. Didn't get one last week. How about this week? Well, they got 3. They got 2 on consecutive plays and then got one a short time afterwards. But that was Bradley Roby's and it comes in at number 5. All right, let's get to number 4, and I go back to the summer of 2019. We're in Green Bay, Wisconsin. We're getting ready for the first preseason game that night, Thursday night. So this is Thursday morning. I'm at some coffee shop in Green Bay, and I get a text from a buddy of mine that says, "Hey, what do you think about the Duke Johnson deal?" And I went, "What? Oh man, we must have traded for Duke Johnson." And then all these thoughts started running through my mind of all these different things that we could do with Duke Johnson. Yeah, as a running back, great, but man, as a receiver, holy smokes. Well, he showed it all off to the Lions with the stutter and go on Jamie Collins that was absolutely just sick. And that touchdown comes in at number 4.
First and 20 at the Detroit 33-yard line. Deshaun looks it over. Detroit showing blitz. Here's the snap. Watson firing deep down the left side and got a man. Duke, he's in. Rock and roll. Touchdown, Houston.
Brilliant route, brilliant throw, brilliant catch, and brilliant body control of Duke to be able to get that ball inside the pylon. Boy, that was just sweet. All right, let's get to number 3. And it's the bomb. Delay a game, push the, or not delay a game, a false start, push the Texans back to 1st and 15. I was like, oh man. But the way the offense is going, I thought it wasn't really a bad thing. It just gave them more room. Lions tried to play man coverage, and it got ugly. Here at number 3, Will Fuller, 40-yard bomb behind the Lions defense for a touch.
First down and 15 for the Texans at the Detroit 40-yard line. Watson in the gun. Here's the snap. Deshaun firing deep. And he's got a man, Will Fuller. Touchdown, Houston. Watson deep to Will.
I'm telling you, Fuller pulled away from Amani Oruwariye. I mean, it was just ridiculous. Maybe not as ridiculous as what we have at number 2, a little bit of a flea flicker.
First down at the Detroit 34, a handoff to Duke, running to the right, and he's going to throw it back to Deshaun, looking and firing left side. And Fuller walks across the 10-5 and jumps into the end zone. Touchdown, Houston.
Well, you want some creativity. There it is.
And that idiot in the background laughing is me. That's what I was doing. I was chuckling. I'm doing the same thing I'm doing now. I was just chuckling. Oh, my God. What are they doing? It's a double pass. I mean, I was like, what? What is this? It was crazy. But it wasn't number 1. Because number 1, oh, yeah, that goes to J.J. Watt.
First down, Detroit from the Lions 25-yard line. As Marvin Jones goes in motion to the left. Stafford back to throw. And he dumps it off. It's picked off by J.J. across the 15, 10, 5. Rock and roll. Watt. Pick 6.
Boy, what a day it was. Texans 41, Lions 25. All right, when we get back, it's our Deep Slam one-on-one of the week. Sponsored by Xfinity. DP Sidhu sits down with Lonnie Johnson next on Texans All Access. Let's jump right back in. It's time for the Deep Slam interview of the week. Sponsored by Xfinity. It's DP Sidhu with Lonnie Johnson.
Lonnie, let's just start there because I feel like the big storyline for you all year is the fact that you have made the move to safety. How has it been for you? How has this season played out for you?
You know, it's been better than I would say my rookie year. Safety is definitely easier than playing corner besides the communication part. It's just being out there on the island, people really don't understand how tough it really is. And being out there on the back end, I mean, it's still tough, but I feel like I'm more comfortable back there. I'm able to do more for this team.
Well, you know, John Harris, he does our sideline reporting. He had said a long time ago that he really felt like you'd be a natural at safety. Is that something that you thought was coming in your future? Did you feel like you were eventually going to make the move at safety, or when were you first approached that that's sort of where things were headed for you?
I felt like that it was on the way. I was trying to dodge it for a minute, trying to see if I can at least get to my second contract first before I get this move. But, I mean, whatever works for the team, you know, and they wanted me at safety. So, I mean, I'm not going to tell them no. I just went out there and just, hey, embraced it.
Well, you have, because Romeo Crennel has said that you just seem to be getting better and better, whether you're playing at the line of scrimmage or whether you're playing deep, that you've really come a long way in playing safety and you've really shown a lot of improvement. So You know, what had the whole transition been like? Is it pretty easy to go from cornerback to safety, or do you think it would have been easier going the other way?
I would say not anybody can do it. But I'm big on my craft, and like I take note of anything I've done in the past that I didn't do right, and I try to do it better the next time around. So anything that I didn't do right from my first season, my rookie season, I try not to do that this year. And with me playing safety this year, any mistakes I made in early, I try not to make those same mistakes. So like I said, everybody can't do it, because you gotta make sure you pay attention while you're in meetings and make sure you know pretty much everything. So it was just easy for me because I paid attention while I was at corner.
I mean, a lot of people talk about that year one to year two jump that a lot of players make. And, you know, you were going from year one to year two in a really strange offseason. It was COVID. There weren't OTAs. You didn't have a training camp. You know, did that make it harder to make the switch? Or at that point, did you still feel like you were going to stick with cornerback? Or had you at that point started making that transition to safety in your mind?
I came in, I think, like the first, since you said, like you said, we had no offseason. So the coaches didn't really get to see, like, all the work that I had put in this offseason at corner. And then once I came in, and I was doing fine at corner, I think so. And I think the coaches seen that too, but, once they moved me to safety and they seen like the flashes, they know my aggressiveness, they just know that I'm one of them players, like, you really don't want to piss off. So, I mean, I don't know. I just feel like the coaches made the right move with it.
Well, we certainly thought so after watching that Patriots game. That the play that stands out, obviously, that fourth and four with Cam Newton, you and Justin Reed both coming out blitzing. I mean, is that one of your favorite play calls to get dialed up as a safety? I have to imagine that's a lot of fun to get to do that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, that's my evil twin, man. So when he calls that play, we look at each other like, you already know it's go time. So it's like, we just go out there and we try, me and him competing with each other. You know, I always said that. Me and Justin Reed, we just gonna come in, we're gonna compete with each other. And when he make that call, you know, it's whoever get that first, man, get the sack.
You said evil twin. I was totally gonna ask you about the evil twin, because I see both of you posting about the evil twin. So both of you are evil. There's not like a good and an evil twin. You're both evil, right? So where did that come from? Who started this evil twin stuff, and what does it mean?
I think actually a fan had said they couldn't tell me and Justin Reed apart on the field one day. I think we had on the same glove, same cleat, both our dreads were sticking out our helmet, and it was like they couldn't tell us apart. So from that point on, I was like, man, forget it. Let's just call each other evil twins, man, and go ahead. We both got bad attentions when we hit people. We just both got like a lot of built up anger, and we put it out there on the field in a good way. And I mean, It just plays out that way, man.
It seems like you two really get along off the field, too. I mean, how much did you rely on him just being in the league an extra year from you and then just in making that move to safety and getting to play back there with him?
See, we help each other because, like you said, he's been in the league a year longer than me, but I'm actually older than him.
Oh, so you are?
So it's like, hey, that's my little brother, but, like, he called me his little brother. And in the league. So it's like, you know, it's a lot of back and forth with me and him with that. And I mean, like you said, we real tight off the field, and like he helps me with a lot of stuff as far as playbook wise. I tell him what I see and he tell me what he see. We just helping each other, man. Hopefully, like, the organization keep us together for a long time. I wouldn't mind.
All right. So you're both evil twins and you're both little brothers. I like it. All right, so you've had a lot of changes personally. You welcomed another baby girl this season. So first of all, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I saw that you posted that with your first daughter being born. And I remember when your first daughter was born, because we were still having training camp, mm-hmm. and you were holding this little bitty baby at camp. So she had just been born. You had just joined with the Texans, and now you're the dad of two. Mm-hmm. You had posted that you didn't cry with the first, but this time was different. So what was different about this time having a baby girl?
I mean, just knowing that I have two kids, two girls at that. This one got part of my name. She's born in November. My birthday is in November. So both Scorpio. You know, it's just so much emotions that came with my second child. It was just like I love my first one to death, you know, but I didn't know how I was going to react when the second one came. And I just knew that I had to turn my game to a whole nother level because I have two girls and I want them to be proud of their dad in any way possible, you know, and I want them to just know that like their dad going to be around for a long time in this league. So I had to turn it up for them.
Do you think being a dad has changed what sort of player you are or how you are just in general? What kind of dad are you?
Man, so like you said, like being a dad has changed me. As you can see, my energy from the Patriots game probably was different from my whole first year, from this whole season. Like it just came from, I guess, my daughters. I know at this point, like I'm playing for them and I have to do whatever I got to do to make sure the food stays on the table for them. So I'm going to get it.
Well, you definitely look like you've hit your stride. You had a big game against the Patriots. You also had the five tackles, two quarterback hits alongside Evil Twin, who got his first sack. Mm-hmm. So what about for you for the rest of the season? I mean, what's in your future? What are some goals that you've set for yourself?
I have a ton of goals, but honestly, I just love winning.
Amen, Lonnie. Amen. Just love winning. All right, we get back. Mark Vandermeer joins me to talk about this one yesterday against the Lions on Texans All Access. Welcome to Texans All Access. We are brought to you in part by Apache Corporation. Nearly 3 billion people worldwide live in energy poverty, meaning they lack access to reliable electricity or clean cooking fuels. The natural gas and oil produced by companies like Apache Corporation help power cleaner electricity, enable access to food, education, and healthcare, and connect us to those we love. We are committed to providing the energy the world needs and to elevating families across the globe to higher standards of living. Learn more at ApacheCorp.com. That's ApacheCorp.com. Now here's the show. Welcome back to a Friday edition of Texans All Access from the Hyundai Texans Radio Studio. I am John Harris, your host. Happy Thanksgiving still. I count Thanksgiving pretty much from Wednesday until Monday morning. So enjoy Thanksgiving. And I know you will because my good friend joins me right now, the voice of the Texans, Mark Vandermeer. Mark, happy Thanksgiving. How does it feel the morning after a big Texans win on Thanksgiving? Again, twice in history, 2-0 on Thanksgiving.
Well, it made for a great Black Friday, Johnny. I mean, I woke up feeling great, and I felt great throughout the day. You know, I'm watching the Longhorns, and, you know, I see the Texans score flash up there all day because there's no other NFL action, and that's the most recent stuff. And, oh, yeah, the Cowboys lost, which, by the way, that Cowboys game, and I'm not sure. You know, like, I know the Charter doesn't have the live TV much anymore because we've gone to the bigger planes.
Right.
But it reminded me of flying home in 2012 because that day the Texans beat Detroit on Thanksgiving.
Yep.
And the Jets played the Patriots in the night game, and that was butt fumble.
Yes.
So to me, the Cowboy game reminded me of one gigantic butt fumble game because that – was like a butt fumble for them, right? And look, we have friends in Dallas. We have friends with the Cowboys. Do I feel bad for them? Probably not, but that is horrible. I mean, to play like that in front of your fans, whatever there were there, and, you know, I like Andy Dalton. I'm just perplexed why they can't do better. But anyway, that made for a good Black Friday to see that score flash up there. And, of course, the most important thing is the Texans winning and the way they did and the way they looked, Johnny. And I'm just trying to enjoy it instead of think about why? Why couldn't we beat the Cleveland Browns and the Titans and close those games out somehow? But they couldn't do it, and we are where we are. But, you know, we have to like where we're at as far as yesterday goes and the win over the Patriots.
Yeah, exactly. Two in a row. And against the Patriots and then against the Midwest faux version of the Patriots up in Detroit. And we sort of talked about it during the game. There was a moment in the game where I felt like he's done. I don't care what happens with the rest of this game, but he's done. Matt Patricia's he's just completely mailed it in. It was right before the half. after the Texans had the penalty that kept the drive alive right before the half. Stafford gets the ball. And the thing is you have Matt Prater, one of the most explosive kicking weapons you could have. I mean, I watched him in pregame kick it from midfield right off the Lions logo, two steps, and nail it into the cardboard cutouts that were back in the end zone. He would have been good from 64 to 65. All they had to do was just get him there, and they wouldn't call timeouts. They didn't stop the clock. I mean, it was the Texans who had to stop the clock, and it was a complete and utter mess. And I'm just looking across the field, and there were no fans in the stands, which for me makes things really nice because I can kind of go where I want to. I don't have to worry about what Lion fan I'm going to run into and all that like I did in Tennessee or even in Cleveland. But it was all I could hear in my head were just boos raining down, like what it would have sounded like in that building. And I just thought, man, I mean, we're going to go through this weekend and he's going to still end up being the Detroit Lions coach. Mark, he looked like a dead coach walking on that sideline, watching him throughout that game. But in particular, not taking any timeouts at the half. I was floored. And it was at that point I realized, okay, we're definitely going to win this game. It's just a matter of how many points we can put on the board in the end. And in the end, put up 41, the best the Texans have done since they put up 53 against the Falcons last year. But, Mark, I felt like the Texans could have scored any time they wanted on Thursday. And I've felt that against the Titans this year, and I've felt that at other times. I felt like they could have scored any time they wanted, and that they, in the fourth quarter, pulled the dogs off because it could have even gotten worse had they put another couple on the board. And I think they could have easily done that at some point yesterday against the Lions.
Well, I think they're playing the way we kind of envisioned when we realized that they couldn't run the football the way they wanted to, right?
Right.
That they're throwing more. They still run it. And Duke ran it pretty well yesterday. I thought Duke had some nice runs yesterday. And I think because of the way they're spreading things out now and spreading out the run calls in the script or however you want to define that, I believe that has a lot to do with it. And, you know, on the PFT feed this morning, for them to talk about Watson as a possible MVP candidate, that might seem far-fetched, but he's putting up the numbers for it. Now, the record isn't there, obviously, but he's definitely putting up MVP-type numbers. You flip that record, and there's no question he's in the conversation, squarely in the center of it, maybe at the lead of it. But all that aside, he's playing great. They found something. Now, look, you'd love a shot at the good teams again, and you're going to get one against the Colts a week from Sunday, no matter what they do against Tennessee this weekend. This is a huge game a week from Sunday at NRG, and I'm already excited about it because, again, I'm going to take it like, let's just play a bowl game this week. You know, you talk about 1-0 every week. To me, every week is a bowl game. It's an end to itself. Let's just see what you can do and take it from there.
And, Mark, one of the things that I really noticed, I noticed it for the Patriots, and I think some of that had to do with the roof being open and it kind of being new, playing at home again after, you know, a couple weeks on the road or a couple weeks on the road. I mean, it had been forever since we had played at home, so that was kind of nice. But I worried a little bit about the guys yesterday. It's a half hour earlier, and you know how creatures of habit everybody is, not just players, but all of us are. We're creatures of habit. You know, we play the game at 12 or one local, whatever, you know, whether we're Eastern or Central, whatever the case might be. But we're a half hour earlier. There are no fans in the stands. You're playing the Lions, not a great team. Are we going to have any juice? Is there going to be any energy? Because that seems to be what and when this team plays pretty well is when they sort of channel that energy. They came on the field from the far tunnel, and they were on the far end. And I was down there, and the specialists were out there. Receivers were catching some passes. And then the rest of the team came out of the locker room to do their activation and stretching. And, Mark, it sounded like eighth grade study hall, like just chatterboxing the whole time. Just, I mean, wouldn't be quiet. I mean, guys were just talking to one another, high-fiving one another, the energy and the joy that they're playing with. And I thought it was really interesting when we had kind of an organizational-wide meeting with Cal and Janice McNair, and that was the word that was used at some point was joy. And you can actually see the fun and the joy that they were kind of warming up with. And I thought, man, if they can just play kind of this way, kind of play loose and just play like they're having some fun, man, this could be a really fun day. And that's really the way it turned out. And to your point about playing the Colts, I almost want them to realize it's not the Colts. That is just the next team on the schedule. And I know that's hard because Colts week is always such a cool week. I mean, since being down on the sidelines in 2014, every single game against the Colts, minus 2017 at the end of the year, I guess you could say 2017 early on, every single game has mattered so darn much. It's been so big in the race for the division. It's been great games with Luck and Watson. It's been incredible play by guys you don't expect, like Matt Hasselbeck. But I kind of want this version of the Texans to not even realize it's the Colts, but it's just the next team on the schedule. Let's just go see what happens, you know? And if they do that, I think it's a tough team to stop because they're kind of right now, this is going to sound weird, but it's almost like they're playing with house money. And I don't even want them to realize that there's even a shot of having any kind of run to get to even 9-7. Now they got to win out, like you said, every game, a bowl game, but I don't even want them to realize that. I want them to just capture the spirit they're playing with and just rock on.
Yeah, they got to stay loose somehow. But, you know, you said it. It's like, how tight can you be when you realize that the expectations, you know, from the outside looking in anyway, are not very high? I mean, people expect them to play better for sure. And maybe some people expect them to beat the Colts next week, and we'll see what kind of shape Indy's in at that point. But I'm wondering how that's going to be. And you're right. There's no way they're going to be able to ignore the fact that the media is going to shower Colts questions all over them. They're going to be preparing for the guys in the horseshoes, and that's that. But you're right. Since you joined the Texans media crew in 2014, every game, I'll say this, even the one in 2017 at home was big. Watson had just gotten hurt. Savage starts. Brissett is going for them. You know, you still have a chance to make this a good season. Let's see if, you know, Savage was going to be your guy. So let's see what he can do. And then they lose, and then it slides out of control from there. So the latter game, the late game that year was just a, you know, get through it kind of thing. Last game of the regular season. And so is the one in 2013 when you were up there with Wade Phillips coaching on an interim basis. But this one does – look, if nothing else, you have a chance. If they win on Sunday, you have a chance to knock off the first-place team. If they lose on Sunday, you have a chance to knock off somebody who's ahead of you and in the division, and it's the Colts. And you have a chance to make them miserable and put a dent in their playoff hopes. I think all of that is cool stuff, and I'm looking forward to it. But, Johnny, I'm sure you agree with me on this, that, you know, you can't overlook in victory what you would in defeat – or wouldn't in defeat or whatever, however the Jeff Van Gundy expression goes, and I don't even know if he made that up. But the deal is this. They're definitely playing well on offense with the passing game. They got to run it consistently, more consistently. We'll still say that. And defensively, obviously they did a good job against the run, and Detroit ultimately had to get out of that ground game. They did have that one alarming drive early in the third where Peterson starts to go off and has 40 rushing yards on the drive, and they're handing off on every play. And all of a sudden, they stop doing it. It's like, thank you for stop running the ball. Like, what are you doing? You were just gashing us, and, you know, you got to make the opponent stop you. What coach is going to stop running the ball when you're doing it so effectively? You know, Matt Patricia is supposed to be this genius, and you see how they handle the end of the first half.
Yeah.
You see how they handle certain situations. Look, I know he's not calling offensive plays, but they got to figure that out. I mean, they've got some talent, and I know they were depleted yesterday, but they should be a whole lot better than what they are. And it was nice to see them make the mistakes and the Texans able to capitalize.
You know, yesterday, Mark, I've done this, I think, throughout this year. And I think back to 2018 a lot because I feel like that 2018 team, yes, start off 0-3, yes, got on the win streak. Yeah, they beat some teams in that win streak, you could argue, weren't great teams. But they also played the second half of that year without Will Fuller. And still went 11-5. But, Mark, I watch Will Fuller now, and I know that Will has, you know, obviously each and every year you gain more experience, you get better and better. Mark, Andre and DeAndre were such different receivers. I mean, bigger guys, You know, Dre did it with such physical size. Hop did it with his hands. Mark, I don't know that I've ever seen a faster, more explosive receiver than Will Fuller. And the touchdown, the first touchdown he catches. Now, the second one was, I mean, I'm still shaking my head at the double pass throwback thing that we saw.
Yep.
But that first touchdown, it was amazing because I was standing about at the line of scrimmage. And when I see Deshaun about to throw the ball, and I look quickly to see, like, who's out there. And I see that Fuller is kind of close to Oruwariye. And then all of a sudden, he pulls away as if Oruwariye is just stopped running. And it really wasn't that. It was like Amani was running, but Fuller was running so much faster than him and pulling away from him. And the thing about it is, Oruwariye is like a 4.4 guy, like a low 4.4 guy. I remember at the combine, he ran exceptionally well. Fuller runs away from those guys. And I know in your ear, I was like, Fuller? Like, he was just so wide open because in the last 20 yards, he pulled so far away. Mark, I've never seen anybody in my life on a football field where there are fast guys out on a football field and one guy can so easily run away from everybody, it's not even close. And it makes me think that in 2018, had Fuller stayed healthy, that really would have been – I think if Fuller stayed healthy in 2018, that might have been even our shot, even maybe even more so than Shabby staying healthy in 2011, that with Deshaun, his second year – Watt, he's got Hop and he's got Fuller, and they're both healthy. I think that would have been a huge shot. And watching Will Fuller every single week makes me think that 2 years ago, man, they were just really getting to a peak, and then he gets hurt, and then it had to start back at zero again. Watching him, Mark, I don't know what the future holds, but my God, I hope it holds a future here in Houston.
You know, that's a good what if for the offseason, because you're right about 2018. If you have Fuller down the stretch, you have him for that regular season Colts game that you lost. You have him for the Philly game that you lost, and it was super close. And imagine what Fuller could have done for you then. And you would have been able to get into the postseason on the bye. And that's the old format with six teams per conference getting in. Now that you have seven, you have only one bye, so you wouldn't have gotten it that year unless you had a better record. But the point is valid, Johnny. I agree with you. I think he is so special to watch. I don't want to take him for granted. It's sad that it's the last year, but you get it how you really couldn't sign him to a long-term deal prior to this year. Maybe you could have. You know, actually, now that he's healthy, you wish you did a discount deal, and you could just capitalize on that. But I don't know what it's going to cost. I don't know how they're going to work it, if they do it all. Do they franchise? I have no idea how they're going to handle Will Fuller, because – the people coming in, you can't even examine a track record because you don't know who they are. So we'll see about that. But let's enjoy it while it is going on here. And he's going to have well over 1,000 yards staying healthy and a hell of a campaign, a Pro Bowl campaign for Will Fuller, Pro Bowl campaign to Deshaun Watson. And they're just guns blazing right now. And here's the other thing we're seeing. And look, we make a big deal out of it sometimes, and nobody wants to hear it. But the lack of an offseason, I know that Bill O'Brien told us in the offseason, well, that's where you have veteran guys so they can fit right in and, you know, everybody will be good to go. Johnny, here's something we never talk about. Are you ready for this one?
Okay.
We never talk about this, but we talked about it in training camp. We didn't want to make too big a deal out of it at the time. But remember how we watched all those practices and they didn't have their guys on the field. They didn't have Cooks, Cobb, and Fuller on the field and Stills all at the same time. I don't even know if we saw one day where they were all in the field at the same time. I mean, we might have, but it just didn't seem like it. Like, you might get Cooks out there, then he sits. You might get Cobb out there. And, then, you know, we never had any consistency. And I think that affected them.
Yep.
You know, these were their games. They didn't have preseason. They didn't have the joint practices. They didn't have the OTAs. I mean, Cecil was telling us on Tuesday, you need those OTAs when you've got new guys. You just have to get to know each other. You have to throw the ball to each throw the ball around and get the timing and everything. And I think now you're seeing it. It took that long. Cooks looks so sharp out there right now, along with Fuller. You don't even have Cobb and Stills right now. I don't want to say it doesn't matter, but what did we say? If you have those four guys, you almost feel like any two of the four, you're in pretty good shape. And I really do believe that. And hey, if Cooks and Fuller, you're in good shape. Let's hope you know the other guys get healthy fast enough. But I'm really enjoying what I'm seeing. And you didn't even need to use the tight ends against Detroit, really, yeah. Which is wild considering what they did 4 days earlier against the Patriots. This is incredible stuff.
When we get back, I want to talk about Brandon Cooks. You heard Mark hit on it right there as we talked about four of this receiving core. But I noticed something about Brandon Cooks on the sideline and during this game against Detroit. And I want to talk about that next right here on Texans All Access. Texans All Access. Texans All Access. Welcome to Texans All Access. We are brought to you in part by Daikin. Hey, Texans fans, get a home field advantage this summer with Daikin Air Intelligence tips you can use to beat the heat in your home. Learn how to lower your energy costs, reclaim your outdoor space, and breathe easier by improving your indoor air quality. It's all part of Daikin's Air Intelligence, and you can learn all about it by visiting DaikinLovesHouston.com. As one of Houston's largest employers, Daikin is doing big things for your fellow Texans. Check out their outstanding limited warranties and financing options at your local dealer today. Now back to the show. Yes, I know this is Thanksgiving break for all of my Houston area teachers out there, but you're going to go back soon enough, and you're going to have to jump into that classroom with some precocious third and fourth graders that may not completely understand math. Well, I've got you covered. Toro's Math Drills, presented to you by ConocoPhillips. Toro's Math Drills is a series designed to help third and fourth graders learn how to tackle math in the classroom. Go to HoustonTexans.com/Toro's Math Drills. And a big thanks to ConocoPhillips for being part of the team and helping kids in the city of Houston learn how to do math. John Harrison, Mark Vandermeer with you on this edition of Texans All Access. And right near the end of our last segment, Mark, you brought up Brandon Cooks, and I'm glad that you did because I was thinking about him. So I pulled up his stat page, and he has, since the Minnesota game where he didn't catch a pass, he's been phenomenal. He has caught 85 yards worth of passes or four or five receptions in every game. Meaning he's either had five or more receptions or he's had 83-plus yards in receiving. Now, sometimes he's had both. But the one thing that stood out to me yesterday, Mark, and Fuller's making the touchdowns, Brandon Cooks was doing work. And I wrote about this. I looked over one time at the sideline, and I remember this goes way back, but I was watching film one night of my team. And back in the day, film, we couldn't shoot from the end zone and we just shot from our press boxes. It wasn't very high. So you always got a shot of the sideline. And I had my punt returner, it was a little guy, and he had fumbled a punt. And he spent the entire game with a football, throwing it up in the air to himself and just catching it the whole game. And I was watching film and I'm like, why is that ball in the air? Like I kept getting mad. Like, why is that ball? And then I realized what it was. And then it kind of blew me away. Like, okay, that's kind of cool. Yesterday, I looked at the sideline. I say that because I looked at the sideline at one point and I saw Brandon Cooks. Now, Brandon was 5 for 5, 5 targets, 5 receptions. He didn't drop a pass, but I see him on the sidelines. He would like flip the ball to himself. He'd snatch it with both hands. He'd tuck it in and he'd kind of act like he was taking a couple of steps. He was a guy that's been in the league for what, 7 years? 8 years. This is year number 7, I believe. 2, 4, 6, 7. Yeah, this is year number 7. And he's on the sideline, and he's just flipping himself the ball like he's making a reception, tucking it in, and then act like he's running while the defense is out on the field. And I just thought, man, this guy gets it. This guy absolutely gets it. He's not getting the touchdowns. He hasn't had a touchdown since the game against Jacksonville. At Jacksonville, we had that long run up the sideline. But he understands what his role is and how vital he is. He's been fantastic. And there was one Fuller catch. I think it was on a crossing route. It was a crossing route. Fuller was on the left. Cooks was on the right. Fuller worked down the field a little bit, about 8, 10 yards in, crossed. Oruwariye was lost again. Watson hits him. And as Fuller crosses the field, I remember thinking, because I could see it from the beginning, Cooks had just flown out of Dodge. I mean, he had to know he was not the guy. He takes off like I've never seen him run. I mean, he is flying up the field. He draws two defenders. One of them is Trufant, who blows his hamstring. The other's a safety. So Cooks just goes right down the field, takes both of them, knows he's got to be the decoy. Fuller catches it, is able to turn up the field, ends up making about a, I don't know, 25, 30-yard gain. And a large part was just Brandon Cooks doing his job. Just, I mean, literally, you're not going to get the ball. Just go be a decoy. Okay, cool. And he just goes. And I thought about that and those two things I saw yesterday. And it just, for as excited as I am about Fuller and Watson, to see a veteran like that, Mark, do the things that he does, it really gives credence to like why he's here. It makes that much more sense to me now, maybe than ever before. And when I think about what the future could be with Fuller, with Cooks, with QT, Cobb, I mean, with that group of receivers, mm-hmm. if you can keep that group together for another year, my God, what could they do throwing the football?
You know, I think they have to. And here's the other – now, I don't know about Fuller again, free agent. You never know. But, you know, everyone talks about all these guys that they signed. And, you know, it's not like they have to get rid of everybody, okay?
Right.
Contracts have been signed. You have these players. These are not bust players. You know, Randall Cobb, when healthy, can still help your football team. I'm sorry. So let the new guys, the new regime, sort it out, because they've got to look at this and say, you know what? Okay, once upon a time they had DeAndre Hopkins, but that's over. You know, we're not going to have him. What do we got? And what we have are these guys, and they're pretty good. Now, you're not young, okay? You're not looking at freshly drafted players. You don't have a young LaVisca Chenault running around or something like that. Maybe you can draft a guy like that. Who knows? But what you do have are guys who can help you win next year. Next year. Now, maybe this year, too. Like, down the stretch, keep winning, baby. But I love what you said about Cooks. It's funny because with his speed, his big play-making ability, he still could be that possession guy for you on occasion. Yes. Like, I love the little throws to him over the middle in a zone sense. And just like throw him a 10-yard pass and get a first down. That's good. I like that. We're not running the ball. We're doing that. So I love that stuff. And then you mix in the RPOs and whatever else you get out of the tight ends. And oh, here's the other. It's not like we buried the headline, but it's one of the headlines. Duke Johnson. Yeah. You know, two running backs catch passes for the first time in a game since Alfred Blue and Arian Foster did it in 2014. Wow. Right. And then you look at. You look at what Duke did yesterday was what we always thought, and you brought it up during the broadcast, what we always thought Duke might do for this football team when he was acquired from the Cleveland Browns for a third-round pick. I mean, that is the Duke Johnson that we wanted to see, and it's not about him. It's about scheme. It's about everything. Not that he hasn't helped this team because they won a lot of games last year, but the point is this. That is a great use of number 25 for your football team. We want to see more of that.
Yeah, no doubt. When's the last time that two receiver or two running backs caught receiving touchdowns?
No, that's what I meant. I think it was 2014. I think it was Blue and Foster, right?
Oh gosh, I gotta try and remember now.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe it was that they both caught TDs, and I forget the opponent that year. Was it the Titans? You know, it usually turns out to be the Titans because there were six touchdown passes against the Titans. Because I was going back to the
that's the first one that came to mind was
the Watt one. Like with the Watt TD, I was like, you know, and I should know this off the top of my head, and I do, but I had to go like, all right, Tennessee, Buffalo, Indy that year, the Raiders, you know, I'm going over the receiving and the defensive scores. So, and it's funny how they don't count the Bengal playoff game in the stats, right? He's had three pick sixes, but we only say two, the one against Buffalo and the one against the Detroit Lions. Because we don't include the Bengals game. It's not a regular season stat. But, you know, to a Texans fan, how do you leave that out? You know, how do you leave out the most iconic player in the history of the franchise, maybe, with J.J. Watt's pick six in the playoffs? But to see him do it yesterday, Johnny, it was like serving up the brisket and the turkey and the dessert and everything on one play, because that was something I've been waiting to see. You know how close he's been to doing something like that again. So you know, every time he gets his hands on one or two hands on one, I'm like, here's another one. No. And then yesterday it happened, and it was so satisfying.
I mean, the throw that Stafford made to Hockenson where Hockenson had to go down to the ground, get himself up and go. I thought JJ was very close to that one. And I saw the replay up on the board. I was like, whoa, he was really close to that one too. So he's just so good at finding a way to just, if he can get his hand on it, that's all he's thinking. Get a hand on it, tip it up, he'll find it. He's got such good ball skills for a guy that's nearly 300 pounds. It was just so good to see. Mark, last one before I let you go. This weekend, we can sit back and watch Red Zone. Colts, Titans in Indy on Sunday. Who you got and why?
Look, Titans beat them there last year, right? Didn't they get that one? Yeah. Yep. But I just think that this is a Colts day. I just do. I think the Titans have sprung some leaks on defense. You know, I always feel like if I was a Colts fan, I'd feel shaky about Rivers. I'd feel good in many ways, but like, where is there a bad throw coming? Because you know it's in there. You know it's a, it's in the bucket, and you're pulling out marbles, and one of them's going to be cracked. You know, and like, this is the one. Not a good throw. So you know it's coming. And I'm wondering if he's got a big one in him in the second half that's going to turn the game. But if I had to pick, I would say Colts. I would say being at home, the whole thing. I think the Titans, they're not – Johnny, it's a confounding team. We know how they win. You know, we do know how they do this.
Yep.
They seem so beatable. But they're capable of beating anybody when the formula's working properly. And it doesn't seem to be that difficult to get it working. It's like, you know, it's the old Ford at the racetrack, you know, that we can just sort of put, you know, let's get a few parts, let's stick it back together, and it looks good, and it's fast enough today, and we got the win, you know. And but if you knock that, if you can stop the run at all, if you can get a turnover or two, if you can get to that defense, as many teams have, I like the Colts this week, so I know it's a long explanation, but this is a hard game for me to watch. And I'm not even joking here. Watching the Titans and Colts play for first place in the division, Johnny, I'm going to need like the barf bag right next to me. I can't take this, but you know I'll be watching it.
Yeah, I know. Here, I think this is interesting. Early on in the year, they beat the Jags, scored 33. They beat the Vikings, they scored 31. They beat the Bills, they scored 42. They beat us, they scored 42. Taylor Lewan gets hurt.
Mm-hmm.
They lost to the Steelers, they scored 24. They lost to the Bengals, they scored 20. They beat the Bears, needed a fumble return, they scored 24. They lost to the Colts, they scored 17. It was only last week against the Ravens where they got back to the 30 mark for the first time since they played us. They have, as much as I hate to admit it, Taylor Lewan out for them is a major, major factor. And I think it'll rear its ugly head against the Colts, too. I think the Colts will exploit the Titans without Taylor Lewan again. But the scoring went from 33, 31, 42, 42 to 24, 20, 17, 17, and then finally back up to 30 against the Ravens, which, by the way, is a total and complete mess at this time of year.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
My goodness. Holy smokes.
Just a total mess. I mean, the thing about the Colts and the Titans, though, the really disappointing thing is that they've had losable games each of the last couple of weeks, and they haven't lost them. And it's just to see them pull out these wins, the Ravens for the Titans, and last week the Packers for the Colts. I mean, I penciled these down as these are going to be tough. They might lose these, and they should lose them, darn it, because, you know, God favors the Texans in the AFC South, but apparently not this year so far. So we'll see how it goes. And, you know, it's too bad, so sad you didn't beat Cleveland and the Titans, because you'd still be right in it anyway with these games in front of you that sort of help you control your destiny to a degree, maybe to a large degree. But, look, we'll watch. You know, the Texans are where they are, see what happens on Sunday, and then play the Colts a week from Sunday and hopefully get that one at NRG. And, Johnny, if they get that one, I think winning out is a real possibility. But, you know, that'll – especially – especially if it's convincing, you know, if it's a 10-point win, they look pretty good doing it, beating Indy at home. I'll say, you know what, this could happen. This could happen. I know it's a lot to ask, but I'll definitely be going for that. Look, I'm you know me. I want every game. I want everyone to come true. And you talked about 2018. You know, maybe, just maybe. But all you got now is the next one. That's all you can do is watch that.
Yeah, well said. All you got is the next one. Mark, appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right, Johnny. Thank you.
Always great to catch up, my good friend, my boss, the voice of the Texans, Mark Vandermeer, here on a Friday edition of Texans All Access. All right, we got one segment down, and we got a weekend full of NFL games to predict. I do it every Friday. I'm all confused. I'm doing predictions next. Stick around. We got one final segment of this edition of Texans All Access from the Hyundai Texans Radio Studio. I am your host, John Harris. Thrilled to be with you following a 41-25 win for your Texans in Detroit. 2-0 on Thanksgiving. How about that? 2-0 on Thanksgiving. That's awesome to say. And obviously, both games have taken place in Detroit. I start thinking, well, they're always going to take place in Detroit, right? Are we going to play this game every 8 years? I thought, no, wait a second. We could potentially go to Dallas in 2022. That could be a Thanksgiving game. I don't know that I would make it as such, but either way, it's good to get Thanksgiving Day wins, no doubt. Now, nice little quirk, both teams that won. Oh, how about this? This math is awesome. Here are your Toro's math drills. A, both winning teams yesterday, Texans and the Washington football team, scored 41 points. How about that? The two losing teams combined for 41 points. Oh, I love stuff like that. I love it. But those games are in our rear view. Let's move ahead. We've got NFL games that we have got to predict, including a couple of big ones, one in particular in Indianapolis, and we will get to that one soon. But let's do it. Let's do predictions for all of our games, straight up and against the spread, and let's start now. But first, I need my music, please. Okay, there it is. So that allows us to get going, and it starts in Atlanta as the Las Vegas Raiders visit at 6-4 off a grueling, tough loss Sunday night to the Chiefs. The Raiders ended up splitting with the Chiefs, but that would have been nice to get a sweep. Mahomes brings them from behind, brings the Chiefs from behind to beat the Raiders. That moved the Raiders to 6-4. The Falcons are 3-7. They lost last week. Somebody's going to get a one-game winning streak started. I think it'll be the Raiders on the road, although this is an East Coast 9 a.m. body clock situation for the Raiders. I don't think it matters. The Raiders are just better than the Falcons, unfortunately. Like the Falcons to win as Texans fans, but they won't. Raiders will win, and they will cover the 3 points that they are favored. The Chargers, they also go to the East Coast, and they take on the Buffalo Bills. Now, I thought the spread in this one would be a little bit higher than 5. But that's giving Justin Herbert a little bit of respect, and the man probably deserves it. He's been pitching it really well, but the Chargers are down. Melvin Ingram, Casey Hayward, Uchenna Nwosu kills the pass rush, or hurts the pass rush. Josh Allen's going to deal all day. The Bills will move to 8-3 coming off the bye. They'll cover the 5. I feel as good about this one as pretty much any game this weekend. Bills win and win this thing by way more than 5. Chargers fall to 3-8 on the year. Giants taking on the Bengals. 3-7 against 2-7-1. The Bengals without Joe Burrow. He got hurt last week. It's going to be Brandon Allen playing quarterback for the Bengals against the Giants. The Giants have been playing pretty well, and as a result, the Giants are favored in this one by 6. I don't like that. Brandon Allen can come in and do some things. The Bengals won't win this game, but they'll cover it. The Giants will eke one out, but the Bengals will get inside that 6 points. Give the Giants the win, the Bengals the cover. All right, the game that I know people in this town will be watching, and as Mark and I talked about it earlier this hour, it's odd. It's weird for two other teams to be playing and playing for first place in the AFC South, but that's where we are right now. Unfortunately, with the Titans and the Colts. The Colts are favored by 3 at home. And they beat the Titans by 17 last time. I am taking all that I have and throwing it all on the Colts to win this one and cover that 3. I don't think there's any way that Tennessee will come in there and get this win. Tennessee got the win in Indy last year. It's a totally different team. I don't think the Titans have a shot. The Titans played a banged-up, soon-to-be COVID-addled Ravens team last week. Colts are a different animal on that turf inside, coming off that Packers win. Colts win, Colts cover. Colts go to 8-3, Titans go to 7-4. And in my scenario I presented earlier, had the Texans hung on in Tennessee and found a way to score more than 7 points in Cleveland, the Texans would be 6-5, and with a loss by the Titans, the Texans would move ahead of them in... I can't even. Colts to win, Colts to cover. Another noon game, the Panthers are taking on the Vikings. The Panthers got a win last week with P.J. Walker at the helm. TB5 will be back, and he steps in against his former squad, the Minnesota Vikings. The Vikings at 4-6. I like what the Panthers are doing this year. I think the Panthers are very difficult to stop, even without Christian McCaffrey in the lineup the last how many ever games. But the Vikings at home, I'm rolling with it. Vikings are a 3-point favorite. That's probably about right where I would say this one is. But I'll go a shade over. I'm going to give the Vikings the win and the cover over the Panthers. The Arizona Cardinals, they fly east to take on the New England Patriots. Cardinals 6-4 after that loss to Seattle last Thursday. The Patriots at 4-6 after the loss to the Texans. At home, New England's a 2-point dog. It's not quite a pick 'em, but it's pretty darn close. In that case, you know what I'm doing? I'm going upset here. I'm going upset New England Patriots to upset the Cardinals outright. Patriots win. Patriots cover. It's obviously they're a 2-point underdog. I think they're going to do it. I think they're going to be a bad weather situation. I think that's going to give Kyler Murray some issue. And I think the Patriots win in an upset. I don't really want it to happen. I don't think we need it to happen. But it's going to happen. I can't believe I just said that. The Dolphins take on the Jets. In New Jersey. Sam Darnold's back in the lineup for the Jets. He'll start. Miami, I don't know that anything's been declared yet about Fitz or Tua, but either way, the Dolphins are going to get this win. And I think they're going to do it by a shade more than the 7 points they're favored by on the road. I really want to see the Jets win. But then again, I really don't want to see the Jets win now that I say that, because then the Jets would be tied with the Jaguars, and the Jaguars could eventually end up with Trevor Lawrence. I don't like that at all. Dolphins win, Dolphins cover. Browns taking on the Jags, the aforementioned Jags. The Jags will start Mike Glennon. Cleveland's favored by 7. That's not enough. There's no Myles Garrett still, but the Browns are going to get this win in Duval County. Mike Glennon may throw them 10 points, and the Browns will win and cover on the road. Then let's get to our afternoon games. Sunday afternoon, Saints v. Broncos. The Broncos get a big win last week, beating the Dolphins, upsetting the Dolphins in Denver. We need the Saints to win this thing in Denver. Saints are favored by 6. That's about right. The Saints better stop that running game. Boy, they better stop the running game. I think the Saints will. Let's give the Saints the win and a small cover. This won't be a blowout. This will be closer than we think, than the experts think. The Saints get the win and the cover on the road. The Niners take on the Rams. There's always going to be a battle no matter where the 49ers sit. Coming off the bye week, the Niners. The Rams are feeling great about that win over the Bucs on Monday night. Matt Gay hits the field goal to beat the Bucs, and that gets the Rams to the top of the NFC West. The Rams are favored by 6.5, and that's not enough. The Rams will win this thing by 10 at home. The Chiefs take on the Buccaneers. Boy, this is going to be a really good afternoon game. The Bucs at 7-4 at home. Didn't look great. Didn't look horrible against the Rams, but couldn't finish. The Chiefs find a way, and will find a way again. They're favored by 3.5, which I don't like. So I'm giving the Chiefs the win, but the Bucs get inside that 3.5. The Bears, the Packers on Sunday night. The Bears are going down in defeat, even though Mitch Trubisky is back. Book it. Monday night, Seahawks taking on the Eagles. Seahawks blow out the Eagles. The Seahawks are favored by 5.5. on the road. The Seahawks will win just like the playoff game. And then Tuesday, the Ravens take on the Steelers. I'm not even going to pick that game because I don't even know if it's going to be played at this point. All right, that's your show. Appreciate you guys hanging around, hanging with me. Big thanks to Mark for stopping by, to DP, to Lonnie Johnson, all of you for listening. Thank you so much to my guys back in studio at Sports Radio 610. Thank you very much. We'll see you on Monday. And as always, go Texans. Welcome to Texans All Access. We are brought to you in part by Apache Corporation. Nearly 3 billion people worldwide live in energy poverty, meaning they lack access to reliable electricity or clean cooking fuels. The natural gas and oil produced by companies like Apache Corporation help power cleaner electricity, enable access to food, education, and healthcare, and connect us to those we love. We are committed to providing the energy the world needs and to elevating families across the globe to higher standards of living. Learn more at ApacheCorp.com. That's ApacheCorp.com. Now here's the show.